it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. We're going to talk about the Joe Girardi news conference. Man, I don't know if you've ever heard certainly better than the last news conference that we heard. The Phillies did it right this time, introducing their new manager to Philadelphia, and so we'll talk about what was said in that news conference. Also, Jim Salisbury is kind of giving us an update on hitting and pitching coach news, so we'll get into that here in just a few minutes. We'll talk about the World Series. We'll talk about some stuff with Phillies free agency and the Athletic piece from last week talking about the Phillies analytics, Gabe Kapler. Oh boy, there's some good stuff in there too. Joining me as they do every week is Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, of course, you know from Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Hi, Justin. How you feeling, buddy?
You know, there was baseball had an off day between World Series games, and we talked on Continued Success about the what I called a clogged toilet of news that occurred in and around baseball between games. And because that was so there was just such a mess, so much spew from that terrible day. The Phillies hiring Joe Girardi, which is a baseball-wide news story. Yeah. It's not really even just about the Phillies. It's like this is the highest profile, probably most popular manager on the market, even though I think only the Cubs and Mets also were connected to him.
Right. Joe Madden maybe with the Angels, but didn't seem to get the press that Girardi's getting, though.
They kind of linked him to the Angels, and then he was pretty much with the Angels. That kind of happened fast.
Yeah.
But my point being that it's not that you forgot. This news just kind of got like backburnered for a while. So the press conference today was great, especially how well it went. Really kind of like cleared your mind of all the baseball stuff we've been going through. And I can only assume that because he's wearing number 25, we all know with the Yankees he wore 27 to get the Yankees their 27th World Series ring and then 28 after they won the World Series in 2009. So I assume he is not going to leave the Phillies until they win 23 more World Series. Mm-hmm, so this was a very encouraging press conference.
Encouraging. Yeah, just the number alone is enough. Yeah, absolutely. Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz as Liz Rocher. Why am I struggling? I was going to say at Liz
every
Yahoo.
Week, John.
You can follow her on Twitter at Liz Yahoo. No, that's not your last name. At Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, John?
Doing great. Let's get into this news conference. This was fun. I mean, the last time we talked about a news conference, the three of us were apoplectic and we went for an hour and a half.
It was an embarrassing mess of a PR spectacle. It was hilariously bad in every possible way. I'm going to guess it's mostly because John Middleton was there.
Yeah, and conspicuous in his absence was John Middleton as well as Andy McPhail. It was just Matt Klentak and Joe Girardi talking
with
the media. And this is what they should have done. This is what they should have done at the last one if they didn't want to cut Matt Klentak's knees out from under him. But I guess they couldn't.
Because Matt Klentak didn't want to fire him like kind of unequivocally. And so they had to put the guy who actually made the decision out there, which was kind of the problem. He's the one that made the decision, I guess.
Yeah. Well, here
I'm not going to criticize it because now here we are with Joe Girardi as our manager.
Yeah. I think the process was all kinds of messed up, but the end result seems to be what everybody wanted. And so Joe Girardi is now in place as the Phillies manager. And the news conference really was a home run. I think Girardi hit all the right notes in his news conference. Although Justin, he did.
Personality.
Yeah, great. A lot of personality. I mean, I think he really seemed to connect with the fan base here. We're going to get into some of his comments. But I do want to point out, Justin, one thing. He did misbutton his jersey.
It was adorable.
And if you can't button your jersey, I'm out. You can't. How can you be expected to handle a locker room if you can't handle a jersey?
This was an easy one to be out on much immediately from minute one. Just a really unpleasant, tough to watch kind of afternoon. I think everybody would agree with me. But this was this definitely, I dare I say it, Matt Klentak even seemed a little more relaxed up there than before. But, you know, hey, we read into body language of the Phillies front office members or executives. That's the last thing we want to do, frankly. The last thing we want to do is guess about the smoke and mirrors tactics that are going on up there and more just like celebrate the things that are happening with the guys who are going to be in the dugout. And you know, a manager, you know, we've talked about what the actual role of a manager is and how little or how much that plays into a team. I think Joe Girardi has an opportunity, at least in year one, to have a pretty sizable effect on this team. Mm-hmm. That being said, you know, they hired a guy for the dugout who is pretty exciting. And, you know, it may have ended kind of strangely with Gabe Kapler. He might have raised a lot of questions, but the truth is, hiring Joe Girardi feels like it answers a lot of questions that we had about all those intangibles that you can never really properly characterize a manager is going to bring to a team. So, yeah, I think Joe Girardi in this press conference was the Joe Girardi everyone kind of envisioned. You know, he was affable, you know, and that intensity, I think, is like not intense like we think like Papelbon intense, like intense when he has to be. Mm-hmm. We make this a good thing. So, yeah, he was affable and he came in like Bryce Harper, kind of knowing what people would want to hear. I mean, this should have been and was probably the easiest press conference Joe Girardi will ever have in Philadelphia. He's not answering any questions about a game the Phillies just won or lost. He just had to come in here, put on a jersey. And he messed that up, but he had to come in here and put on a jersey and wave and smile and just be like, I want to win. This is what I think about this guy. Isn't this great? Hey, Reese and his fiance are here. That's what's wonderful. And be on his merry way. And, you know, he nailed it. And everybody's pretty excited. So it couldn't really have gone better.
Yeah. And Liz, he was on the WIP afternoon show. And he was talking college football with those guys. He just, you know what? I think the difference is, you know, it seems like he's just so comfortable. And I don't think, you know, Gabe Kapler, and I don't want to compare Joe Girardi to Gabe Kapler from here to eternity. You know, it's the first impression of Girardi and how different it feels from the first impression I think we had of Gabe Kapler. He just seems so comfortable in this role. You know, it seems like he just walked right in and it's fitting him like a glove right from the beginning.
Well, comfortable. It was natural. He's done this before. He's got experience. Like, he was up there doing his tight five, you know? He had all the stories, you know, he was talking about, you know, Phillies guys he used to play with. He mentioned Vuk. He was dropping names. Like,
Floyd Yeoman's shout-out. Love the Floyd Yeoman shout-out. That was my favorite.
He's got, you know, he mentioned on the WIP show that how John Kruk once ran him over at home plate. Right. Awesome. After he'd gotten out of the hospital for something else.
Awesome.
Rammed him in, like, on the bridge of his nose with the Crux cap, the bill of his cap, and sent him to the hospital again. Blood was pouring out of his face, but Kruk came to visit him.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
I know.
It's a beautiful story.
It's a beautiful story.
And like,
he had a Ryan Howard story about his son, about signing a baseball. Yeah, that was great.
He's just... It's not about being calculated. It's just about being honest and doing what he's been doing and was born to do. Like,
yeah,
that's
and I
the thing. Like, it's a different, like, we're going to have to compare him and Gabe Kapler. But Kapler doesn't have that experience. He doesn't have that comfort. And it's all, it always seemed like it was about projecting an image.
Yeah.
And that's just not what, you know, Girardi's, you know, he's what, 55? You know, he's a 55-year-old man. He's not really worried about that. He's been in baseball long enough. He's been fired several times, you know. He's been around. Nothing's going to really faze him, which is what the Phillies, they need routine. They need a strong and steady presence. They need a guy who's not going to panic. He's not going to, you know, start smashing the red button, you know, World Series managing every single game.
Joe Girardi makes it, bringing him in makes it seem like something, at least one component of whatever experiment the Phillies were doing is over, because he's not somebody you have to learn about. He comes in having already built this resume of management. It's like Liz said, I mean, Gabe Kapler's sitting there, everybody's, you know, the first question is basically like, who are you?
What?
Well, no, actually it was Howard Eskin asking about the coconut oil, of course.
God.
But... that's the thing. We didn't have to like mine his blog or anything for questions. Everyone was like, it's Joe Girardi, you know, Joe Girardi from baseball.
He's your dad.
You may know me from such teams as the New York Yankees and the Florida Marlins, and I've won World Series. And yeah, I agree, man. It's like what you just heard, a baseball guy. You know, he said straight up, I mean, from the time he talked about his playing days and his long time as a manager, this team has enough question marks going into 2020 to not have one – at manager, and I think with the rest of the coaching staff, we're going to get to some of the coaching staff rumors in just a minute. It sounds like they just want to get as many adults in that room as they can possibly get. And Girardi's an old school baseball guy, but he also knows numbers. He talked about analytics. I loved his answers about how he would handle the locker room. We'll get into that in just a second. But I think, you know, he's one of those guys that's going to know how to talk to his players, know what to say to them, how to hold people accountable from things. And from day one, they're going to know somebody that's in charge, but, you know, expect things of them. But at the same time, you know, he's going to, I'm just very optimistic that he's going to be able to connect with these guys. And as we talked about, you know, last week, I guess, when we did this, you know, that it seems like he'll learn from any mistakes he might have made in New York. And I think the biggest thing here now is, though, that the Phillies, maybe even before with Gabe Kapler, I think they still thought that there was still some growing to do with the team, that they knew that they had a team in place when they first hired Gabe Kapler that could compete for a playoff spot or were close. But Matt Klentak said it today on Joe Girardi. It's time to win. It's time to win right now. This is a manager that they've hired who can do that. And that's the difference, is you know you've got a manager in place who's won before. And I feel reasonably confident he can get more from this group of players than the previous regime got. So that's, to me, that was the thing. It felt like there was a calming presence up there at the podium with Matt Klentak, and everybody seemed happy. Matt Klentak even seemed like he enjoyed being there, that this was a happy day. It was just such a different vibe from 2 weeks ago to today.
Yeah, I mean, that at that point, they were really defensive. They were just defensive about everything. This time, Klentak showed up in, like, a light suit. You know, he looked like he just came back from vacation. Like, he looked relaxed and relieved, honestly. You know, he looked relieved that he knew that this was going to go a lot better, because you can count on Joe Girardi not to say anything weird. You know, and you know that he's going to bring that spirit into the locker room with him, and he's never going to let anything get too out of control. You know, he's not going to, we're going to talk about Gabe Kapler in a minute, but he's not going to do what he did and grip tighter and tighter and tighter, in hopes that that's going to fix everything, you know, hoping that you can, you know, you only have so many fingers and toes to plug so many holes in this team. You're going to have to let something be. And I think Joe Girardi has the ability to sort of let go and let this team manage itself in a way on the field. Like, you don't need 8,000 pitching changes every game. I think Joe Girardi is going to bring that kind of calmness of management, which we all need, because watching Gabe Kapler games, so few of the games I remember being pleasurable, because it was always like, what is he going to do? What do I have to prepare myself for?
Why are we starting Jose Perella over Corey Dickerson?
Oh my God.
Why does this game already have something we're going to ask questions about before the first pitch is thrown?
Right. Where's Adam Heasley?
why are our four top relievers all unavailable tonight? You know, I mean, that kind of stuff. I just don't think we're gonna see that kind of stuff.
Why did he
anymore?
Have to warm up 8 times? Like, honestly, some of this is basic stuff that I don't think is going to happen ever again. Because we're going to get into it, but it's embarrassing.
Yeah, no, and I think some of the stuff Girardi said even hit at some of this stuff a little bit. He said something like, I don't always do as much storytelling as other managers, but I tell you the truth all the time. He said, I'm extremely honest when it comes to, you know, I think I like the other thing.
Storytelling is such a way to put it.
Yeah,
my goodness.
I don't know if he was taking a shot at Kapler, but I think.
I doubt it.
Oh, no, I do too, so. But I feel like that's, it's an indictment of a certain, of the Gabe Kapler type of. Yeah. Over explanation.
Right. And so I don't think he feels like he needs to do that. And, you know, I just, you know, he also, listen, somebody gave him the handbook, Justin, on what to say to Philly fans too here. I mean, just as far as about winning.
Maybe it was Bryce Harper. So he gave him the handbook a year ago too.
Maybe it was spending 5 minutes looking at Philly's Twitter. Like, we're not hard to figure out, I don't think.
You know what?
Right. Maybe it's just sitting down in a chair and being like, what can I say that won't make people boo or throw stuff at me? Like,
well, spending 5 minutes in the Philadelphia airport. I don't know.
He listens to the pod. It's pretty clear. He's a podcast pal. That's the thing. I mean, Joe Girardi, podcast pal. I think that's great. And Joe, if you want to come on the show, you know, we'd always be happy to have you. There's no chance Joe Girardi is coming on this podcast, but we'll, you know.
I think that's fine.
I'd call it a win if Joe Girardi's time in Philadelphia ended at some ambiguous point in the long-term future, and he has heard of this podcast once.
Even if
he forgets about it.
Or hates it and thinks they're awful.
More preferably hates it, yes.
Yeah. I think, you know, and he's going to have one advantage that Gabe Kapler didn't have, of course. And that's
a couple, I think.
A couple. But one big one is, you know, just he's going to get the benefit of the doubt off the bat, and that's huge. That's
fans
huge.
Will not hate him on site.
Right. I mean, so it's interesting too. I thought his comments on it was interesting what he was talking about as far as like having rules in the clubhouse. You know, is he going to have run a tighter ship than Gabe Kapler? And he undoubtedly is, because it would be impossible not to run a tighter ship in the clubhouse based on everything I've heard from Jim Salisbury's reporting, which just boggles your mind if you ever listen to any of the interviews Jim has done talking about the Phillies clubhouse. And it was basically just kind of a free-for-all in there. You know, it's kind of funny. He talked about a lot of the music. He's like, no competing music in the locker room.
That was so specific. I love that.
It was
that.
Very specific. You could tell that's something that's really ticked him off over the years.
One person, one playlist, the end.
Exactly. But Justin, I like how he kind of said, you know, his mantra sounded a lot like Charlie Manuel's mantra of like, be prepared, be on time, be accountable, focus on winning. And he's like, is there really anything else you need to worry about? And a lot of the narrative from this summer was about the hustle stuff, you know. And I thought Girardi crystallized it really well. And this is kind of the way I have mentioned it when I've gone on the WIP morning show and tried to calm those guys down when they get all crazy about it. Is because he said, yeah, it looks bad, but it's a lot about controlling your mind, you know, when you enter a moment of frustration or extreme excitement. And it's not necessarily that a player is not playing hard or that they're playing lazy. It's you're in a moment and you're having, he called them adult tantrums. And he said, it's our job to help them not have their adult tantrums. I love that phrasing, because you're not, you know, if somebody doesn't, you know, hustle or something out of the box because they're ticked off, they popped up again for the 10th straight game, he's probably going to sit him down, but not because he's trying to, you're not a hustler, you know, he's trying to help. It's like if you have children, you know, you have to train them not to have tantrums on the field, because it can lose a ball game for you.
Yeah, I was honestly going to bring that exact phrase up, because I feel like I've said over and over again, if you're trying to boil down what a manager's job is, it's to make sure your players are comfortable enough to play at their highest level. Like, that's essentially what you're trying to do. That's like when you're an adult trying to build a culture for a bunch of other adults. I mean, it's like the most realistic, like real life kind of scenario you can compare it to that all of us have experienced is like a teacher in a classroom. And those are children. Like, you can influence children. Adults are kind of more, you know, set in their ways, you might say. So all you can really do is just be like, all right, what's going to make this group of guys comfortable? What has worked in the past when I've made locker rooms comfortable before and they've done really well? Am I Dallas Green and I've made everyone hate me and they use that united hate to rally around each other?
It's worked, but yeah, it's not fun, but it works sometimes.
Or am I Charlie Manuel and I'm just like, all right, this is, you know, I have this advice to offer. You can come to me if you need it. I know how good you guys are, blah, blah, blah. We all get along. Everybody's comfortable. This is great. In this case, when he says there's just adult tantrums, it's our job to help them not have those tantrums. First of all, I'm glad this was addressed, because it was a debate we had all summer long again. Mm-hmm. Felt like every other week there was a moment where I was like, is this guy hustling? Is that guy hustling? Why are we complaining about that guy hustling and not that guy hustling? And that they addressed it is, I think, great. But also this kind of goes back to that argument that he's saying it's our job to help them not have those adult tantrums. Like, what do you need? Your kid woke you up at 2 o'clock in the morning. What do you need to feel better about today? Because you're starting. So, like, you know, what do we need to make this better? What do we need to make sure you're not slamming your bat into the ground or losing focus on what the count is, or not running when the strike three rolls to the backstop? Like, what do we need? So, I think that was really encouraging to see, because for me, that's the nucleus of what a manager's job is.
Yeah, Liz, I mean, what did you think about his talk about controlling the locker room? I mean, there's obviously something that was lacking last year, and it's not the most important aspect of getting a team to win. Obviously, there are more important things you need to do as a manager to get your team to play better. But as I sit and think about how important a manager is and how much does a manager really help a team improve and win and result in victories on the field, this is one of those areas, I think, where the manager actually has an ability to help a team's performance on the field. Because otherwise, you know, we can talk a lot about the manager and we could talk a lot about Joe Girardi, but at the end of the day, these players have to play well.
Yeah, I mean, again, I also agree. Adult tantrum is a great way to put it because we all have them, you know, but we don't also have a team of people who are supposed to help us not have them. Like, that really is their job. And I want to see Girardi actually do this. I'm really excited. I'm excited to see what he's going to do and how the players are going to react. I'm excited to see how things go in spring training because just everything you hear about the Phillies clubhouse is like, it's the terrifying stuff that you knew deep down in your heart was totally going on, but you just wanted to believe the happy face that was being painted on it. Like, you know that's not how a clubhouse is supposed to be run. Like, there's supposed to be accountability. There's a reason why clubhouses have been run a certain way for a long time, because it works. Yeah. Like, I'm supposed to start work every day at 8 o'clock. You know,
you don't get to just choose whenever you want to start work. You don't get to sleep. Yeah, there are expectations placed upon
you. Like, baseball's different. It's not a traditional workplace, but it is a workplace. There are expectations, and the fact that there weren't as many, I think, was just such a bad factor. And all of us, you know, we talked about it a lot and speculated that that is what was going on, that things just weren't tight enough. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's going to help. Like, just having someone there to be like, no, this is how it's supposed to be. Everyone do this. Like, it's not hard. It's not limiting them. It's not, you know, it feels ridiculous to be excited about this.
I know, right?
We shouldn't be so dumb. Just excited about a manager. This is what most teams have. This is pretty much every team has.
Yeah, every good team.
Gabe Kapler is interviewing with the Giants. He's made it to the second round of Giants interviews, so we'll see what happens there. I wonder what they're going to do.
Yeah,
he seems like he would fit in well there, but I feel like if there are more stories to come out, Phillies beat writers, get on it. Get them out there before the Giants have a hiring decision to make.
Grant Brisby wrote an article on The Athletic San Francisco about this, about reservations about the Giants hiring Kapler, and it really just boiled down to like, you know, this is what I can find about him. This is what I learned talking to people who are familiar with the situation. This is what obviously I learned from looking back at the stories Liz is referencing. And honestly, I don't see the thing a team like the Giants is going to need from a manager like Kapler. His conclusion was, but if, you know, the team president sees something in him and feels like there's enough of a reason to interview him, then I guess that's enough confidence for me. But it was like pretty reluctant sounding. So that was kind of what I was saying. I mean, I didn't bring this up just to like trash Gabe Kapler, but by the end of his tenure here, it was like, what is he doing well? What is it that we feel like is valuable about him? Why are the Phillies going out of their way? Why is John Middleton going out of his way to figure out whether or not he should keep him? No decision like that is easy, but this one seemed a little more straightforward than flying around the country taking a straw poll. At the end of the day, we might be glad he was so calculated in his decision making, but that's kind of the conclusion I reached, the same as Grant, that I didn't see what the appeal was, and it'll be interesting to see if it works in San Francisco for him. Should he be hired? Because now he's got at least 2 years of experience. You know, now he's now he's on that tier of managing candidates.
Let's see if he actually learned anything.
Yeah, well, I want to get into the Athletic story that came out last week. We're going to get to that in just a few minutes, too. We'll take a quick break, and then I want to get into Jim Salisbury's piece talking about the pitching and hitting coaches. Looks like the Phillies might be zeroing in on some targets there, and some names are coming out now. So we'll talk about that up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hitting Season. So now that Joe Girardi is in place, the Phillies are fully engaged in bringing on new hitting and pitching coaches. And obviously, I think anything we get is going to be an upgrade over John Mailey and Chris Young. I mean, I think both those guys might get jobs like that again in the future, but just were not the right fits here in Philadelphia. And so the Phillies are reportedly targeting guys with lots of experience, which is no surprise given the manager they just hired. And no doubt Joe Girardi is going to have a big hand in selecting his hitting and pitching coaches here, if not the final say. But Salisbury is reporting that former Reds manager Brian Price has emerged as a strong candidate for pitching coach. He apparently turned down an opportunity to be the Diamondbacks pitching coach. So it makes one believe that he's perhaps close to a decision someplace else. Boston also needs a pitching coach, but
or that he just
they
did
just
not want to go to Arizona.
That could be it too. Boston just hired a new president of baseball operations, so they may be a little bit further away from getting a new pitching coach in place. Girardi said they've already conducted a couple of interviews for the pitching coach job during his round of interviews on Monday. Price managed the Reds from 2014 to 18 and was the pitching coach for the Mariners, Diamondbacks, and Reds before that. There's also conversation about Larry Rothschild, who was just let go as the Yankees pitching coach. He has a chance too, apparently. I would imagine he's one of the people that have gotten interviews. And Girardi had some complimentary things to say about his former pitching coach, Rothschild. I guess it remains to be seen whether or not ends up being one of the candidates. Let's talk about Brian Price first. I mean, Liz, what do you think about Price as a potential pitching coach? I'm not familiar really with him a whole lot as a former pitching coach. Obviously, he did well enough to get a managerial job.
Yeah, I mean, I am a little bit more familiar with Brian Price. He was the Reds coach for 4 years before they fired him and hired David Bell, who is, I mean, him and David Bell are not completely different managers. David Bell has gotten ejected a lot more, but I don't know if there's much to say. He's been a pitching coach in a lot of places. You know, that's not necessarily an endorsement of quality, nor does it mean that he is bad. Pitching coaches are eminently interchangeable. I think he would be fine. I mean, what else is there to say about Brian Price?
Well,
I have a lot more to say about Larry Rothschild.
I know you do.
Liz, you'll be very fascinated as someone who doesn't believe there's much to say about Brian Price.
God.
The Cincinnati Reds portion of his Wikipedia page reads, on October 17th, 2009, Price was hired as the pitching coach of the Cincinnati Reds.
And that was it.
So now you know that. No, I do want to say,
thing that, but he had Brian, some other.
Brian Price is he burned himself into my memory with the expletive-filled rant he delivered at the Cincinnati Press following one of them spotting Devin Masarako on a plane and determining that he would not be available to play the next day and tweeting that. And Price used, according to the media, the F word 77 times, as well as 11 additional profanities.
I heard about that. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm on the Wikipedia page as well, they do say, you know, Price, as the Mariners pitching coach, was the USA Today Baseball Weekly's pitching coach of the year in 2001 after leading that staff to an American League ERA title with a 3.54 mark, which was an improvement of almost one run per game from the previous season. Price was named Major League Coach of the Year by Baseball America in 2007 after the Diamondbacks had a 4.13 ERA that was fourth best in the National League. So he apparently also worked for the Phillies as a minor league consultant at some point before joining the Reds as well during the 2007 or 2008 season, but not really sure about that. So, I mean, it seems like he's got some half decent resume anyway with the and really that expletive laden rant could only enhance his stature among the Philadelphia faithful. But Liz, I know you have some strong feelings about Larry Rothschild, a name we all know about, but I think you offered a compelling reason when you mentioned it on Twitter earlier today why you think Rothschild would not be a good way to go here for the Phillies.
I happen to follow an extraordinary amount of Yankees fans. I don't know how it happened, but there they all are on my Twitter timeline all the time. I couldn't find a single one that was unhappy about Larry Rothschild being fired. That doesn't necessarily mean a lot, but they also offered some evidence of how he's kind of screwed up a number of pitchers this year, like Sonny Gray. After he you know, Sonny Gray was throwing, I think, a slider that was terrible, that he had been told to throw by Larry Rothschild. Now, I'm going to assume that might have come from a little further above, but he sucked it up and left and became an incredible pitcher again, which he always was. Like, it's incredible that the Yankees couldn't wring anything out of him. You know, they screwed around with James Paxton, sort of had him go away from some of the stuff that he threw in Seattle that made him good. Again, there are questions about where this is coming from. Because, you know, front offices today, they have a lot of say in what pitchers, you know, what pitchers do every single day. But no one had, I didn't find anything complimentary to say. And also, I think he's like older than dirt, right? Is he very old?
I think he's in his 60s, like 64,
really?
Something
because
like that, I think.
My memory, he looks, he's 65. He looks... My God, my dad is nearly 65, and he does not look like this. I honestly thought he was in his mid-70s. This can't be right. Someone check his ID.
Time marches on crueler for some than others.
Marched directly
but,
over this guy's face. No offense.
I guess. but anyway, Justin, you know, Larry, I think the Larry Rothschild stuff is interesting. I mean, we just had a pitching coach who didn't seem to know how to get the most out of his pitchers, who was asking his pitchers to do things that they weren't capable of doing. And one of the things Girardi talked about at the news conference that I thought was really good was that you have to be adaptable to the players that you have, not try to take the players and make them adapt to something that you want them to do. And I think that was a big problem with the pitching staff last year, and that seems like something like what Rothschild was trying to do in New York with Sonny Gray and James Paxton.
Yeah, I agree. I think at this point you got to be really careful about how you start coaching these young pitchers or pitchers at all that are going to be in the Phillies rotation moving forward, because we are all very familiar with the issues they had and why they were having them. And, you know, fortunately, everyone seems to have come back around on Zach Eflin, you know, including myself and others on this podcast. But he, you know, he most infamously suffered from having his what he wanted to do, having his in-game strategy kind of twisted around. And it wasn't until he went back to it that he was able to find some more success this season. So, yeah, I just gotta think you gotta be a little wary about that, about overmanaging your pitching staff, about trying too hard to fit this mold, this idea that you want to create, that like you, this idea you had and you're trying to fit the guys on your team to it. That's why you're right. That's why it's so encouraging to hear Girardi say that. I think this is not the kind of coaching that's gonna improve things for this pitching staff. I think you gotta have a light touch moving forward, and if that's the style Rothschild had, which it sounds like he did, trying to force a guy to throw a slider that just wasn't working, you know, yeah, that's not what this team's moving forward. This team needs dominant pitching from at least one, preferably two or three spots in its rotation, and guys who are being told to throw particular pitches that they don't throw, that they don't want to throw, or that they're discouraged from throwing. That's not going to do it.
Yeah, no, for no kidding. Well, here's the news that I think you guys are really going to be excited about. In the Salisbury piece where he talks about Brian Price, at the very end, the last paragraph, he throws this little nugget out, because we haven't heard much about the Phillies hitting coach pursuits. He says, I would not be at all surprised, or what did he say? How did he phrase it? It would not be surprising to see the Phillies consider a reunion with Matt Stairs as hitting coach, guys. Would that not be awesome to bring Matt Stairs back into the fold as a hitting coach? I thought he did a terrific job with this team. What was he with them? Just one season, right? In 2017 was he with the team and really turned Aaron Altherr around and seemed to help a lot of the young guys as they were coming up perform well when they reached the majors. I would love to see Matt Stairs back in a Phillies uniform.
He left
Liz.
The broadcast booth to return as Phillies pitching coach. Then they punted him into the ether. You know, that he picked up with somebody with another team. I don't remember what.
The Padres.
Oh, gosh.
He went to the Padres.
And he was fired from there, too. Like, hitting coaches and pitching coaches, you can pick them up and drop them. Like, guys who have that job for a long time, it's rare these days. So why not pick? I mean, what is the worst that could happen? You fire him midseason? Who cares? Like, yeah. You just find another one. But, like, have Matt Stairs come back. That's just the amount of goodwill you'd earn from Phillies fans is insane. We love those guys.
Yeah, he was fired from the Padres last year after not being able to get the Padres hitters to do a whole lot. But
I don't think
you
that
know,
was necessarily his fault.
Yeah, I doubt it was. You know, I mean, it's only so much you can do with the Padres playing in a pitcher's park. I just think I really loved how he got the and he was just with the Phillies for one season as a hitting coach. And I talked about it, you know, a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Pete Maccanin in that 2000. Well, it was last week when we were talking about our favorite teams of the 2010s, our third favorite team, and mine was 17 because of how that offense really took off in the second half when Nick Williams came up and Rhys Hoskins came up and all the young guys started coming up, and they scored the fourth most runs in the National League in the second half, and it seemed like they were really building towards something, and it still makes no sense whatsoever that they weren't able to keep Matt Stairs, Justin. So this would be great if he came back. I would love it.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about bringing in somebody like Rothschild, and it just sort of feels like you're clinging to the, you know, you bother to bring in Girardi, but then it feels like you're clinging to what everyone's going to associate the Gabe Kapler era with, which is, you know, forcing guys to play in a way that the analytics say they should, but maybe they aren't ready for. And in the case of bringing back Matt Stairs, it just feels like another nice little bleaching of that idea. I think that would go a really long way, even just from a PR standpoint. And we all know John Milton loves his PR moves that get people talking. And, you know, this it wouldn't even just be purely that. I mean, I kind of wish Charlie Manuel would just stay in that role because that was cool. But obviously, you know, you kind of felt like that was fleeting when they brought him in for the last 2 months of the season. So Matt Stairs would be great. I mean, like you said, it's not just saying, oh, how about this playoffs hero from the Phillies past? It's a guy who was so good at talking about hitting that the Phillies listened to him on the broadcast. They were like, maybe we should have him talking to our players about this.
He's like a younger Charlie Manuel with the way he talks about hitting. You know, he may not be the same caliber of hitter, but, you know, we learned by listening to him. He knows how to break it down. He could explain it to me. He could explain it to anybody.
Right. And the Phillies have had a couple of cases of guys who we know have some form of hitting talent who would just disappear and would struggle in ways that clearly were mental, you know, or at least being perpetuated by their mental state when they came to the plate. I mean, Matt Stairs was the one who continually told us, even on his way out the door, Michael Franco, like, there's a hitter in there. I know there is. Like, he worked with him enough. And there were little moments, little blips where Franco looked like he was going to be that hitter. And losing Matt Stairs, you know, beginning of this season, 2019, he looked good again. But, obviously that fell apart. So I think Matt Stairs could be that switch in a lot of young players for whatever reason. Young or, you know, been here a couple times. 3-4 years since, you know, we've lost track of time during this rebuild process. But yeah, I think he was definitely somebody who had a great repertoire with the hitters and was able to communicate with them. So if you want to talk about great communication in Joe Girardi's clubhouse, I think Matt Stairs would be a great guy talking to hitters about hitting.
Yeah, and he really turned Aaron Altherr into a really good hitter in 2017. I wonder what would have happened with Altherr in 2018 if Matt Stairs hadn't left. And of course, you never know. Altherr might have just gone exactly the way he did, and there's nothing you can do about it now. But anyway, those are some of the latest rumblings regarding hitting and pitching coaches. Real quick before we hit the break, let's talk quickly about the Athletic piece from last week. This was kind of a shocking piece of news, but I think this confirms some things we all were worried about, and that is the data that the Phillies were using, but specifically with the pitching staff. The fact that none of these pitchers were progressing last year, no one got better. It wasn't just us who was noticing it. We weren't crazy when we were watching this. Apparently, the Phillies were really concerned about this, too, specifically Gabe Kapler. In the piece by Matt Gelb and Megan Montemuro, they wrote that the Phillies abandoned specific data sets that influenced game planning and in-game decisions halfway through the season, according to multiple club sources, because they feared the information was not accurate enough. There were disagreements among uniform personnel about certain game plans, and sometimes mixed messages were conveyed to the pitchers and catchers about how to attack opposing hitters. It gets more specific. After repeated pitching failures, Gabe Kapler formulated his own scouting reports from the data he valued most, according to sources. At one point during the season, Kapler began to send his version of the game plan to the next day's pitcher and catcher without informing others. That generated some confusion in pregame meetings when the plans did not match. The story went on to say, the whole process was erratic. It only exacerbated the problems that Kapler and his staff faced due to a pitching shortage. The Phillies lacked a rotation they trusted, and their bullpen was compromised by injuries. Much of the brain trust attention before games was spent trying to devise a roadmap to 27 outs that limited their pitcher's exposure. It was a challenge even before the issue of questionable data arose. And so I guess my point, I don't know, what do you think is more at fault here, Justin? Was this more, does this seem to you like Gabe Kapler was doing all he could because he realized the numbers he was getting wasn't working? Or was this a complete and colossal F-up by Gabe Kapler by putting his own game plans together and confusing the hell out of his pitchers?
Well, I mean, let's just keep a foot in both camps and call it both, because I think that's kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah, that's true.
This is the case of a guy being like, all right, let's break this down. I can fix this. I can fix anything. Going into it, going into the numbers, deciding what he thinks is right, and then communicating poorly, which, you know, if we're talking about the 1-2 punch of what Gabe Kapler was supposed to bring to this, that's not both of them. That's the opposite of what you wanted from both sides of that. Oh, a proponent of analytics and a skilled communicator. No, 0-2 on that one. So, yeah, I got to tell you, that was I wouldn't have guessed specifically that was happening, but it was one of those moments where you're like, okay, yeah, I can see that happening. And that explains a lot because, yeah, there was it just felt like there was a piece missing. Occasionally from this team, like mentally, or it's just like, why did that happen? Or, why did he throw that or pitch like that? Or why is he in the game? And if that was the product of guys being like, well, we're going to do this, except the opposite might also happen. Or like two coaches coming together in front of a player and being like, this is the plan simultaneously. And then holding up two different cue cards. Yeah, that's going to cause some confusion. So again, communication. Very important in any workplace. In a baseball clubhouse, you know, also very important. More important for the Phillies because it seems like they really, really struggled in that area in 2019. So it'll be very encouraging to see what Joe Girardi is able to do here, because everything feels like it's going to be a little more straightforward, a little more streamlined, and a little more structured, which I think is what the Phillies focused on by bringing Girardi in the first place.
Well, and I do think Girardi will help. He's not going to make those kinds of mistakes where he's contradicting the reports that are coming in. What I think he'll try to do more is get to the heart of why the data isn't correct, and make it a more streamlined process, Liz, because here's the issue. If the data they're getting is wrong, if the data they're getting stinks, there's a big problem. And the Phillies are still playing catch-up in the analytics game. They clearly are not at the place where a lot of the other teams are if the data that they're giving the players and the coaching staff is this far off. And that's what worries me, maybe even more than the Kapler thing, because, yeah, Kapler sounds like he was just kind of a deer in headlights and trying to figure things out on his own with a lot of this stuff. And it's, listen, if you're a manager and you're hamstrung with a bullpen that's been ripped apart and underachieving starters and you're getting bad data, maybe I can understand a little bit that you're trying to figure this out on your own. But that being said, if the information is wrong, if the data is wrong, that's not good, considering you're still trying to get to the playoffs and you're in year whatever of this rebuild where you've been building this analytics department up, that they're still churning out bad numbers.
So I would love to get more information on what data was what they didn't trust, because there's data that they can collect themselves, but there's data that they, you know, that teams purchase from Baseball Info Solutions, from other places. They've got StatCast data that comes in. Like, they themselves, the Phillies as an entity, are not responsible for a ton of their own raw data. A fair amount of it is captured by other people, and then they purchase it. There is some that they get themselves, and this is true for every team. They have the same sources. So I'm curious, first off, what exactly that means. What data did they trust? Because there's, if they don't trust the data, like what is that? Is it the raw information that they're getting, or is it what they're doing with it? Because those are two very different things. I would love to find more information about that. I would also like to say, I don't think Gabe Kapler was a deer in headlights. because it's a fairly calculated move to be like, all right, well, I don't trust what I'm getting. I'm going to create my own scouting reports, seek out numbers that I trust, and distribute this to the pitchers ahead of time before they get to the ballpark and get the official information.
That was probably a poor choice of words on my part.
I just wanted to say, I don't think that's really what he is, because that's a choice he's making to go around what the team itself is doing. And that's dangerous. Like, if he had problems, why wasn't he talking to anybody? Why was he talking to his best friend, Matt Klentak, or any of the, analytics staff, which were integrated into the clubhouse, which made players uncomfortable. Like, some teams do this, but either how the Phillies did it or whatever, or these just aren't the players to do it with. However it was, they weren't comfortable. And that also put pressure on everybody. The clubhouse is the sacred place. It's sacred place sounds so stupid. It's a workplace, really. It's their office. It's their space. And having analysts sort of just hanging out there all the time doesn't really seem amazing. Like, you want to know them and they should be there occasionally, but maybe not so much that it actually makes the players uncomfortable. Like, what a ridiculous miscalculation. Thank God people are talking to the beat writers, finally.
Yeah, and it seems like that's one thing that has happened with this whole transition. A lot of dirty laundry is kind of airing out, and I think it's what needs to happen right now. And so, yeah, we knew it would, and now, I think that's one of the other reasons they wanted Joe Girardi or somebody with experience, just to kind of clean a lot of this up. A lot of the discipline that's being talked about isn't necessarily with players and hustling and all that kind of stuff. It's just, you guys are here. If there's a problem here, here's how we're going to address it. Here's how we're going to move forward. You need somebody in control like that. And that's one of the things they're hoping that they get with Joe Girardi here as they move forward. And as we move forward here, we're going to finish up talking about the World Series. Games 3, 4, and 5 in Washington, D.C. And take a look ahead at the final two games of the series. We will do that next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So let's talk about the Fall Classic, guys. When we left, I guess you guys touched on the 2019 World Series on continued success. And you guys did a fantastic job with your episode last week on continued success, talking about all the mess with the Astros and the World Series and all that. So if you guys haven't checked it out yet, make sure to check out Justin and Liz's latest edition of Continued Success. But after games 1 and 2, with the Nationals winning the first two in Houston, it looked like we were going to be celebrating a parade here in Washington, D.C. at some point. I was trying to figure out, would I have to take a day off work to take my kid to the parade and all that kind of stuff. And now, Well, after games 3, 4, and 5, the Nationals lost 3 in a row. They did not lead, and they were not in any of those games from the first pitch to the last. I mean, you talk about a complete domination. The Nationals' negative 16 run differential at home in the World Series is tied for the fourth worst at home in a single World Series in Major League history. Really, the best performance I thought by anybody with a curly W on their chest was the fan in left field who absorbed a home run ball in his solar plexus so he didn't drop his Bud Lights.
Yep.
That was easily the best athlete in the entire, based out of Washington, D.C., in the entire stadium. Couple other notes with the series in the 2-3-2 format. In all series that have been tied 2-2 entering Game 5, when the road team wins, they go on to win the World Series 82% of the time, 18 of 22 times that's happened. This is just the third time in World Series history the road team has won the first 5 games. It happened in 1906 and 1996. No series has ever seen a visiting team win Game 6. So if the Nationals do that, it would be the first time ever. And one Phillies-related World Series note, George Springer is now tied with Chase Utley for the most World Series home runs in the wild card era. So, as we get ready for Game 6 and 7, Justin, you've got Strasburg going up against Verlander in Game 6, and you've got Scherzer going up against Greinke in Game 7. Well, before we get to 6 and 7, let's talk about Games 3, 4, and 5. What did you make of the Nationals in Washington? Their first World Series in like 8 decades, and they were completely out of it in every single game from the first pitch to the last.
Yeah, I gotta say that I've never undergone a rooting experience that I have during this World Series. I will be, and I said a version of this before, but I will be much more upset about the Nationals losing now than I would have been about them winning earlier in the postseason. This is an unbelievable. If they wind up losing this in this fashion after all that's happened narratively going into this, a rainbow appeared over Nationals Park before Game 3. They were practicing the trophy hoisting ceremony on the field. Wow. They had the stage set
were
up.
They really?
They have. There are pictures.
Oh, that's the worst.
No, that's how you lose.
You can't do that.
How you lose.
Part of me
I
thinks
know that.
This must be something they do in every World Series. It's like setting up, if it's like in a potential Game 7, they set up both locker rooms to be, you know, covered in champagne, and obviously they got to sadly wheel one cart of champagne out of one of the locker rooms. But I, you know, at the same time, it was like, boy, what are you guys doing? At the same time, you were just like, yeah, I mean, I get it though. Like, there is, the wind is at this team's back. They are absolutely, they look charmed. And beating the Astros 12-4 in Game 2 was just like, yeah, this is, they got it. I mean, Juan Soto has looked unbelievable. What a terrific young player to get to watch in a setting where we don't have to worry about him beating the Phillies and the Phillies right. already being out of contention. I mean, that's, that we're looking at like a, I don't know, just like a, I keep thinking of like the legendary, like when we talk about like Mickey Mantle or Roger Maris, like Juan Soto looks like the kind of guy we're going to be talking about for generations to come.
Yep.
That being said, yeah, now we've kind of witnessed this downfall due to, you know, maybe it's toying with the bad mojo of assuming you're going to be hoisting a trophy sooner than you actually are or not, but who knows why. You know, but it had to be mentioned that with all the narratives coming into this series, that the Nationals were so excited that they didn't have to get here with Bryce Harper, and that they had the talent, that they managed to find the wins that they lost by trading him away, and they didn't have to pay him $300 million. I mean, hey, that's great, guys. It's really, I am happy for you. But for a team that is unable to hit with runners in scoring position, you know, at Nationals Park this season, there's a guy on the Phillies who's a .285 hitter career at Nationals Park. In 2019, he hit .344 in Nationals Park in 10 games. Mm-hmm. With runners in scoring position, he hit .357 in 2019. So, I don't know, might have come in handy, I guess.
More wins probability added than all but like two players in baseball this year.
Would have been cool, I bet, to knock in some of those runs, because, you know, that would have increased the likelihood that you would win some of these games.
They'll never know.
Yeah, here. Guess we'll never know.
And the guy that they used, the Bryce Harper, because the way the Nationals thought about this was, I mean, they say they tried to bring Bryce back, but I think they wanted Bryce to take a hometown discount, and he didn't decide to do it, and that's fine, you know. But I mean, it's you basically, they made that calculation because Juan Soto essentially replaced Bryce Harper in the outfield. That's basically how that worked, and so you took the Bryce Harper money and gave it to Patrick Corbin. So then when you get Patrick Corbin in Game 4, and he's going up against the Astros bullpen guy, and I still don't remember his name. It had a Q in it, and that's all I remember.
Kitty, I think that's how it is.
Fine, good, awesome. Either way, you got to win that pitching matchup against Q. I mean, if you've got Corbin against Q, I refuse to learn his name, because we'll never hear from him again. We'll never hear from. This is going to be one of those guys that, you know, you read about in World Series lore like 50 years from. Hey, remember the guy with a Q in his name who outdueled Patrick Corbin and totally turned the series around? You know, I mean, that's the game they had to win. And, you know, so you not only do you not have Bryce Harper helping you, the money that you used that you would have paid for Bryce Harper, Liz, for Patrick Corbin, he comes up small in a game in which he had to outduel the other guy. But yeah, just crazy how the Nats have folded here in D.C. Crazy.
Depressing. Sorry, go ahead, Justin.
Oh, no, that's fine. I was just going to bring up that, yeah, it's the pitching that has been, that was like, finally it was working for the Nationals. They have come to the playoffs before with an elite pitching staff built for the playoffs, and they've watched it not be, you know, they've watched themselves need a little more to win playoff series, because this is the first year they've actually won a playoff series. And now all that stuff that typically happens a couple weeks before now is happening. And it just, that's why this is kind of like, In a way, you can find your way to the idea of like, oh, okay, this time they wanted to suck Nationals fans in, make sure that they were in securely to this run, believing it was real, and then utterly decimate them with like a news alert saying, hey, Max Scherzer can't pitch tonight. Oh, well, Joe Ross is going to really pull one out of his ass here. Hey, good luck, everybody. See you at the park.
Like, they lost themselves this World Series. Like, I considering that it's not sure, it's not 100% that Scherzer will even be able to go again. Like,
Dave Martinez made it sound like 100%. If there was a game 7, I think Scherzer was his starter. He sounded deadly serious.
He's
going to
be he's going to be a walking sack of cortisone.
He's got to be. I can't imagine. Yeah. Like, his keeping him from pitching is hard to do. You have to imagine he had to be hurting a lot.
That's an emotional toll in hitting him with a brick so many times, you know.
I mean,
well, go ahead, Liz. I was going to say that's the thing when you get older, right? I mean, you know, we saw Roy Halladay pitch his guts out in game 5 of the NLDS in 2011 and was never the same after that.
No. It hurts my heart still and will hurt my heart forever. But, you know, the Nationals had a chance to win this series several times, to even just get ahead, at least one more game.
Game 3.
You know, win one more game before they had to go back to, you know, to Houston, to unfriendly territory. Yeah. You know, they beat Cole and Verlander in straight games. That is a gift that the baseball gods do not give you more than once. They don't give it to you more than once, and you have to use it, because otherwise, what do you have? Like, their bats have gone completely silent. That's really what it is. The pitching has been great, but their bats have been quiet. And that's the biggest problem, because all these losses have felt really one-sided, and they shouldn't. The Nationals should at least be in it. Like, because the fans, I'm going to shit on Nationals. I'm sorry. I'm going to crap on Nationals fans quite a lot after this, you know, after this is all over and probably for the end of time. But they showed up.
They showed up, did they not? I thought the same thing.
They are loud. Yep. They are positive and really enjoying it. Like, they were so supportive of Joe Ross, even when he left the game after giving up four runs. Like, they were, Nationals fans have really been in it, even with very little reason to cheer, especially yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, especially on, you know, with Max Scherzer being scratched. They've been in it, and I feel bad because they're just, they're so pure in a way, watching them with their shark costumes in the playoffs. Like, they're just like, look at this, we're here, we're, this is great. And, you know, it's like there's no recognition that at the end of this, someone's going to be real unhappy, and it's probably going to be them. Oh, poor guys.
As a Phillies fan, it's hard. I mean, I obviously, you know, have rooting interests here, but as a Phillies fan, I have a hard time feeling bad for Nats fans in general, because Nats fans have not been terribly kind to the Phillies and Phillies fans in recent years. There's, you know, a lot of, they still have an inferiority complex towards the Phillies, and that's fine, but they shouldn't anymore, but they do. But I have to, you know, I saw that too in game 5. I mean, I could not believe how loud they were. The whole, even when they were down big, still just loud as hell. I mean, it was amazing to me. I do tip my cap to Nats fans for showing up the way they did. That was pretty cool. So,
I mean,
I'm trying to find something good to take from this crap fest of a playoffs. This has been miserable. I need something to cling to, and soon it's going to be the sadness of Nats fans.
I just want to say that I agree with you guys, and it's always very cool to see a fan base really fall in with its team, especially in the playoffs. Guys, we're talking about game 4 of the World Series. If you're not going to show up for game 4 of the World Series, then you're not even really a fan base. So, yeah, they definitely were there, and they were wearing costumes. It was great. Oh, carnival atmosphere. Awesome. That is so cool. But, like, you know, do you give the bus props for showing up on time? No, you just complain when it's late. Like,
I guess fair enough. Fair. Again, it's looking fair for something to cling to. The Astros are about to win the World Series with Roberto Osuna. Like, the only thing I could be happy about is that Gerrit Cole gets a ring after spending so many years being wasted by the Pirates, mm-hmm. who did not deserve him. And so that's the only thing I'm going to take from this, because at this point, I'm just going to say it. I can't see the Nationals coming back. It's going to be the Astros.
Well, let me ask you that. Okay, so you think it's definitely going to be the Astros. Do you think they at least, Justin, do you feel the same way that the Astros end up winning this thing?
Hey, I called the Astros before as my preseason prediction. I said in seven games, so...
Well, Do you think it gets to seven? Let me ask you that. Do you think the Nationals find a way to win game six?
Well, apparently I make my picks based on the last thing that happened, because it's apparently the only thing that I can envision happening. So at this point, no, it does not look like this Nationals team does not look like it's ready to come back and now win another game on the road. Even though all they've done is win road games in this World Series. That was three games ago. This is a different team now. They apparently don't know how to hit. Their strong pitching doesn't stand up against the Houston lineup. You look up from your drink, and the Astros are up two runs, it feels like, in all three of these games. It just seems like they start the game spotted two runs. So, yeah, I don't see how this team, how this Nationals team is going to pull through and now win two games. It used to be that it seemed like they were destined to walk away with this series. Now it seems like insurmountable for them to win the next two.
And maybe that's why I feel like maybe it's possible, because it feels like a harder job than it truly is, because it is still – they got to win two games in a row. Just got to win them on the road. It does. I feel like I agree with you, though. I don't think it gets to a game seven. I think the Astros find a way to pull this out. They just have all the experience in the world. And, you know, Strasburg's been amazing, but Strasburg can also have a game where he kind of falls apart.
He's only one man. He can only do so much.
Now, Verlander 0-5 in his World Series career. So, I mean, you feel like that streak's got to break too, Liz, you know?
It's about time. Like, he's going to pitch, I think he's, what, game six?
It'll be Strasburg's Verlander in game six.
I mean, it feels like he will be the one to really bring it home, especially after doing so badly in that first game that he pitched, game two. I have a feeling he's just going to come out there, throw bullets, and the game will be done in like 2 hours.
I will make this prediction. I think the Astros win game six. If the Nationals win game six, I think they win it all. I think if it gets to Scherzer, Greinke in game seven, the Nationals win it all.
Yeah, I could see that. I want that to happen. I think that's all I can that's, say that's is what I think. Want that to happen.
Yeah. And maybe that's where that's coming from. There's no logical reason for that. I just feel like that's what's going to happen. Anyway.
What a story. I mean, hey, that would be a hell of a World Series.
Wouldn't it?
For Scherzer to come back out, like, as you characterized it, a walking sack.
They just wheel him out, like, very slowly out of play.
The cortisone game. Instead of the bloody sock game, it would be the cortisone
just
game.
Wheel him out Hannibal Lecter style, which is probably how he sleeps anyway, and they, like, unhook him, and he just collapses in a heap.
He does seem kind of like a sociopath, honestly.
Pitching coach zaps him with a cattle prod, and then they both like run away as he wakes up. Like, ah, wait, what happened?
His arm starts rotating. You sort of have to throw balls into his open hand, and he tosses them.
There you go. It works for me. All right. Any final thoughts, Liz, before we wrap up?
I want to say one thing. I have a fun internet story to share.
This is a good story. Everybody,
I follow
listen.
A handful of like. Classic TV Twitter accounts, because I'm an old woman. I'm just an old woman who loves old television. And they tweeted something, a TV Guide cover from like last week in 1986, I believe. And it was on the cover was Kevin Costner and Susan Sarandon. I think it must have been the TV premiere of Bull Durham. Or something like that. And it was something that was ostensibly written by Susan Sarandon as Annie Savoy. Annie Savoy's, you know, red hot tips for World Series watching. And so I quote tweeted it, like, I'm headed to eBay to find out where to find this, because I have to read this article. And Susan Sarandon's assistant found the tweet. I don't know how, but her actual assistant found the tweet. And She has this TV Guide in her collection, and so she quote tweeted that tweet and took pictures of the article and you know, tweeted them at me. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me, because Annie Savoy is like my idol as far as, you know, movie heroines go, rom-com leads. She's amazing. so well written and so well acted. And I was just so amazed. And then her assistant sends me, you know, she tweets at me and says, "Would you like to have this?" And I fell off of my chair. And I just got it in the mail. Her assistant sent me a DM and I set my address and she signed the front of it. And now it is in my possession. Susan Sarandon. I mean, and the article is also really great.
Like, that's fantastic.
It's really, it's so well written. We talked about that. For a TV guide, it's someone got into character, and you were suggesting that it was probably her, and just wrote this thing because it's totally, you can hear her saying.
Yeah. I mean, I tweeted at someone, you know, it's not like we needed any further evidence that she completely embodied and understood this character, you know, but this just sort of proves it. And she favorited that tweet. The actual Susan Sarandon. I could only assume that she wrote this.
I would think. I mean, why? I would think. Sure, why not?
She seems like it's something she would be game for, right? She seems like a really fun person in general. But like this, just who else could write it as well as this, as well as the person who played her?
I think you guys will end up having coffee.
I would die. I hope she's still dating. She was dating like a 25-year-old for a while, and get it is all I'm saying.
Tim. No, not poor Tim. I don't know anything about her.
No.
He let this go. It's now he has to live with that for the rest of his life. Susan Sarandon belongs to all of us now.
Very well. Very well. I'll let you. I'll sit back and let everyone have their turn. And that sounded weird. I'm going to edit that out.
Hey.
Hey, Justin, any final thoughts?
A couple now. my final thoughts are our guy, Dr. Trevor Strunk on the Dirty Inning, is having a couple of what you might call brain problems. So, you know, just keep old Trev in the back of your head. That being said, we are planning on recording a new episode of the Dirty Inning based on the long history of the last time the Nationals were inspired by the long time ago that the Nationals were a Washington team was in the World Series in 1933. World Series probably going to be over by then. Doesn't matter. We're nothing at the Dirty Inning if not timely and relevant. So, you can look forward to that.
Well, that's all good stuff. So make sure you are subscribed to the Good Fight podcast feed to get the Dirty Inning and continued success in this podcast as well. And since most of you already are, make sure you tell a friend as we get ready for a busy offseason here covering the Philadelphia Phillies. We are the number one Major League Baseball podcast on SB Nation right now. So make sure you get in on the ground floor and also check out the Hitting Season Patreon where we have some bonus content up there as well. It's at patreon.com/hittingseason. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Right here on Hittin' Season.